Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Happy Monday, and welcome to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and we have a really interesting show today. It's something a little bit different, and I think all of you listening will learn something. I'm really looking forward to learning something from today's guest. But before I introduce him and bring him on the air, I just want to give you guys a reminder that the NCAA championships are coming up, and for those of you who have been following college tennis this year with your junior player, I really want to encourage you to keep following through the championships. If you're anywhere near one of the rounds going on right now, I hope you'll go out and support your local teams. And for those of you who are lucky enough like me to live within driving distance of Athens, Georgia, the Final 16, the championships are going to be held at University of Georgia again this year, and you couldn't imagine a better venue for college tennis. I mean, the stadium is amazing, the environment there is absolutely electric, and I encourage you to come out and support your teams or just to watch some great tennis if you're not pledging allegiance to any team in particular. I will be out there hopefully every day during both the team and the individual competition. I'm still working out a few kinks in my schedule, but if you're going to be around, please let me know so we can connect and I can say hello. And I really want to encourage all of you to get your kids out to watch these matches. They are just incredible, incredible opportunities. So, that said, I want to tell you a little bit about Matt Previti, who is today's guest on the Parenting Aces radio show. And I'm going to just read this little introduction that Matt sent to me because he really said it all very well. He is a leading expert in the tennis industry on stringing and customizing rackets. And Matt's background as a coach has really helped him to bridge the divide between what type of equipment a player needs to improve their game with what type of equipment is best suited to their body and playing style. Matt is annually one of 9 stringers from around the world invited to participate on the Indian Wells stringing team, and he's worked with many high-profile professional college and junior tennis players. He's a master racket technician and has recently been brought on as the brand and sales rep for Solinco String. So, as I said, Matt he's an interesting guest. It's something different that we've never talked about here on Parenting Aces, and I'm really looking forward to picking Matt's brain and hearing what he says about racket technology, string technology, tension, and all of those things and how they impact our kids. So please welcome Matt Previti to Parenting Aces. Matt, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Good morning, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's morning where you are. I've already had a full day.
The beauty of living in Southern California, you know?
Yeah, don't rub it in.
Then again, I don't get to just swing on by to the Athens NCAA 16, so you've definitely got a leg up on me there.
There you go. So let me just jump right in because I know you have a ton of information to share with us today. So picking rackets, picking strings, there's just so much that goes into it. And I know my kid has changed equipment several times over the years based on where he was in his development and what he was trying to do with his game. So maybe you can let us know, what are some general guidelines for parents and for junior players when choosing rackets and string?
Well, like you alluded to, an hour might not be enough time to talk about all this stuff because it is very complex, and I think that's one reason why a lot of people tend to take the let's just go with the simplest, cheapest, easiest to acquire approach when it comes to equipment is because it can be extremely overwhelming. I mean, to be honest with you, even for someone of my understanding, I try to keep up with all the different models and weights and gauges and types of string and technologies and new strategies, and it's overwhelming for me. So I can certainly appreciate for the layperson that maybe doesn't have a huge background in it why it would be paralyzing sometimes. But what I'd love to do today is, like you alluded to, break it down in a way that maybe is a little bit simpler to understand and maybe sheds a little light for the listeners out there on maybe some things they could do a little better or maybe some things that maybe they've overlooked. I think the most important first step that a lot of people miss when it comes to equipment is that the bottom line in the industry is sales. So these companies are not going to stay in business if they're not selling a lot. So right now there's a lot of controversy about pros painting their rackets like retail models to try to sell more rackets, like pros not using the strings that are marketed as them. I think that the oversight that a lot of people make is that if you painted all the different companies' rackets black and your child went out and hit with a lot of them, your child wouldn't see that brand. They wouldn't see that Nadal used their string. They would just see what we'll refer to as the specs, the specifications, how heavy it is, how long it is, how big the head size is. Those are the most important things you want to pay attention to. And when we're looking at those things, especially in regards to juniors, there's definitely some trends that we would want to follow. And I think the first one that we would look at are the specs that we cannot alter. So, for instance, let's say your child uses a racket that's extremely light and you and I talk and say, you know what, maybe it's better if they use a heavy racket. We can alter that weight using lead tape, adding silicone in the handle, a bunch of other different strategies we can discuss. But that's a feature that is customizable once you have the racket. But there are certain features that when you're buying a racket, if you don't buy that type of racket, there's no changing it. And the specific ones that I want to talk about are the racket length, the string pattern, so how many strings there are in the racket face, and the width of the racket, the beam width, how thick it is. So when it comes to racket length, there's obviously some benefits to using a longer racket, so you hit the ball a lot harder. A lot of people would say you have a lot more power, although we'll talk about that phrase later on. There are certainly some upsides to using a longer racket. The downside, the glaring downside, is especially when you're a junior who's developing technique and trying to follow your coach's orders and gain a sense of feel with a racket and an understanding of what the things I can and cannot do with this racket in my hand, using a racket that's bigger and bigger and bigger is going to make everything exponentially more difficult and difficult and difficult. So in general, for the, let's say, Lisa, 16 and under crowd, typically an extended length racket is not the direction we would want to go. In fact, in many cases, and I know several coaches that do this, using a shorter than standard length racket, so a 26 and a half, well, standard length racket is 27 inches, using one that's 26 and a half or even 26 just for practice can be very beneficial because, again, it's a lot easier to maneuver around. So that's where I would start. We're buying a 27-inch racket in most cases for juniors, especially ones under 15 or 16 years old. The other, one of the other physical traits about a racket that we need to look at when we're purchasing it is going to be the string pattern. And this is a very controversial one in the sense that there's a lot of misinformation regarding strings, stringing, and string patterns. And the most important one I think we could talk about here, and again, this is a very broad topic nowadays, is that the way people play tennis at higher and higher levels is by utilizing tons of topspin to keep tennis balls in play. You could make the case that hitting flatter is a benefit to a lot of the top pros. However, I would say that that's a trait that's typically more amongst elite college players and top pros. A lot of the best pros in the world, and obviously certainly juniors, are going for more and more topspin. And that's going to come with a more open string pattern. So 16 mains by 18 or 19 crosses is definitely the way we would go instead of 18 mains by 20 crosses. And just the same way that Wilson and a lot of other companies are promoting these super open string patterns, Prince has them too, that are maybe 16 by 15 or 16 by 16. The idea is that anything that allows the strings to move more when you hit the ball allows your child to hit more topspin, which in turn tends to make them play a certain style of tennis. If you're able to hit more topspin, you can aim higher over the net, you can swing faster, you can generate more confidence, a concept that doesn't get talked a lot about when it comes to customizing. If I can aim higher over the net and have balls dramatically drop into the court, that will give my child more confidence in their ability to keep balls in play. Those are the big ones that just start to keep things simple. We want to go with a 27-inch racket. We want to go with an open string pattern, maybe a super open pattern if my child's younger, but usually 16 by 18 or 16 by 19 is the way to go. And the other physical one is the beam width. And I think what's important to understand is that the thicker the racket I buy, the more energy it's going to transfer back to the ball. So, again, Lisa, a lot of people use the word power, but I think that's, again, something we're going to talk about and sort of dispel that myth. The bottom line is the thicker the racket I buy, the harder my child is going to be able to hit the ball. Maybe I should say even the faster my child is going to be able to hit the ball. Now, that's where I typically come in and we start to have a discussion about why do we want my child to hit the ball faster? Is that something we want? Do we want to counteract that? So, Lisa, I don't know if you've ever, you know, had somebody say, oh, well, your child has a lot of power, so we want a control racket.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really two schools of thought here, which would be I want to counteract whatever abilities my child has. So if they're smaller, we want to add power. If they're bigger, we want to add control. Or the flip side, which is, to be honest with you, the way most pros think, which is I want to enhance whatever I've got. So
right. Maybe
I'm a really wily, methodical player that is never going to hit super hard, so I'd like to use a racket that bolsters that, maybe that is a little thinner and doesn't hit the ball as hard. But again, most pros tend to go the other direction because of the way tennis goes nowadays, where it's more of an arms race, and the thicker the racket, the harder I hit, the more winners I hit, the better I play. Now, that might not be the way to go with a junior, but it's certainly something to think about, that if I want a child to play longer points and be able to get bigger cuts at the ball without balls going out, a little thinner might be better, a racket like maybe the Wilson Blade, or we make a great racket called the Solinco Tour, that is what most people refer to as a classic, quote-unquote, control racket. So those are the three big ones I would say right out the gate: the racket length, the string pattern, and definitely the beam width. Those are the things you can't change.
When you say beam width, is that something that's printed on the racket, or like if you went to the manufacturer's website, you would be able to find that information? I know string pattern for sure and length for sure, but beam width is a new term for me.
Yes, so that would definitely be available on any retailer's website, Tennis Warehouse or Midwest Sports or Tennis Express, websites like that. You can definitely and should be able to get those on the manufacturer's website. So Avala has all those specs, and Solinco has those specs and things like that. What I would say is that it's the easiest way to do things is to have the racket in your hand. And that, as far as I'm concerned, that is a top priority for anybody looking for equipment for their child. And I say that for a couple of reasons, and the biggest one being health. If your child goes to hit with a racket and leaves the court and says, ow, my arm hurts, or my shoulder's tired, or something along those lines, that's probably a great indication that that racket is not a good choice for you or your child.
And I think pay attention to that, yes?
I'm sorry, say that again?
And we should definitely pay attention to our child's assessment there.
Oh, it's such a sad, sad tale I've seen too many times where I will hear, I've literally heard this out of players' mouths where they say, I love my racket and my coach loves the way I play with my racket, but it just kills my arm.
Yeah.
And I think there's a question there, which is, why did we begin having a player falling in love with this equipment when it's been causing them pain? So it's kind of like the seeds of a bad date. You go out on a terrible date, and for some reason you just keep going out with this person, and all of a sudden you're married to a terrible person. Why did we even go there? How come we didn't avoid them after that first bad date?
Right.
And so I guess to go in another direction, I think there's a couple things that maybe we should talk about as far as injuries. Because let's be real, Lisa, that's the number one concern for junior tennis parents, I think, when it comes to equipment, is what's going to keep my child healthy.
Well, and I think that what's interesting, Matt, is how few of us relate injury to equipment. You know, we think of it in terms of, well, my child's not fit enough, my child's not strong enough, you know, they're not getting enough sleep, they're not eating the right food, and all those things for sure can play a part, but the equipment is such a simple thing to fix if that is, in reality, what's causing the injury.
Yeah, I agree. And there's two key points, I think, that are important to understand here. One of them is just a myth of a falsity of modern society that nothing we do with a tennis racket in our hand is natural for the human body. The human body did not evolve to do anything with a racket in our hand. So when you look at it from that sort of filter, you start to appreciate how you really need to maneuver this dynamic very sensitively so as not to injure myself. I know a lot of people say things like, oh, he's injuring himself because he's got bad technique. That's why his forehand is bad. Roger Federer's forehand is not a natural motion for the human body. It did not evolve to hit Federer's forehand. I think that it's sometimes there might be people that scoff at that because it's so beautiful and so wonderful to us, but that's a component of, again, living in a modern world where we think everything we do is natural and okay and is just going to be fine. Now, I think there are many things that Federer knows and does and has people do for him that keep him healthy and that allow him to play so much without risk of injury. I also think, to be honest with you, the way we play tennis nowadays is so violent and aggressive that we're going to see more and more people be successful purely because they are less injury-prone.
Yeah.
So I work with a client right now who will remain nameless, who's a top junior here in California, and you could make the case would be on the USTA Player Development's radar as a top junior in the United States, and he just has he's got a bad go of it. The poor kid, just every time he turns around, something new is hurt, and I think we all know a horror story of somebody in our area that's that guy or girl, and, you know, he's losing ground on those other players. It's very sad to say because it's really nobody's fault other than the fact that his body is having a hard time holding up under duress.
Right. And a lot of times I think we tend to kind of brush it off as growing pains, especially in young teens. You know, oh, that's just normal. You know, all 13-year-olds have knee pain. All 13-year-olds.
Yeah.
You know, their joints are achy because their bodies are changing, the hormones are kicking in. And that may be a valid point, but it also, like you said, could be something as simple as they're playing with the wrong racket or the wrong string.
Yeah. Well, and I think what's interesting here, I'd completely forgotten that the second point I was going to make earlier, which is that when it comes to equipment or the human body, we would much rather play an entire lifetime of tennis with equipment that is 99% right, quote-unquote, or feels right, than play out of our minds, but our body doesn't feel great because it takes a lot more time, money, energy, patience, happiness, all these things we have to invest. It takes so much more of that to heal your body, which may be irreparable, I hate to say, than it does to say, you know what, I'm going to use a racket that maybe doesn't feel great, or I'm going to use a type of string that maybe doesn't feel great, or a tension that isn't perfect, and I'm going to adapt my game to that equipment. And I know that that's really hard for a lot of people to hear, especially when I talk with a lot of lower-ranked pros between maybe 150 in the world to 500, 1,000 in the world, former college players, and they're struggling. They've got no money. They're really having a hard go at it to make a career out of being a pro tennis player. And they're injured because of their equipment, and I'll suggest changing, and they say, listen, I don't have a sponsor. I don't have any money. I can't go trying new strings because if I take a week off, I'm going to lose, you know, so many points. And it's very difficult. And to be honest with you, a lot of them don't want to hear it. They want to hear what's going to get me to the top, what's going to make me better, what's going to earn me some money. And the sad truth of it is that they're really going downhill fast because you just cannot fight your body if that is your weapon out there. And it's really, it's too bad.
Right. And as we were saying before we went on the air, I mean, the timing for this show is so perfect because there's still time if your child is playing with not the best equipment for him or her. There's time to make that change before the intense summer tournament season gets going. So, you know, I hope people are paying attention and really kind of thinking about what changes might be necessary with their child's racket or string or both.
Yeah. Well, and again, I think what's lost a lot, and I'm working on an article right now about this concept, is understanding the dynamic of the tennis equipment business, which is that, you know, due to things like marketing and sponsorships and pros using equipment, for children especially, there are so many factors pulling at them to use different equipment and different sizes and which one is, you know, which one does Roger Federer use and which one looks cool. But I think we forget sometimes that the bottom line is, again, if they were all painted black and all the strings were the same color, obviously it would become very clear to us which one is the one that's going to help my child stay healthy on this endeavor, both for their enjoyment, for their psyche, for their health, and then there's some things we can alter to help their game. I think to comment on what you were just saying, there's one huge sort of elephant in the room when it comes to injuries and rackets, and this is one of my big nuggets of information that a lot of people don't even know is a real thing, I guess you could say, and that is the concept of racket stiffness. So every racket has a measurable amount of stiffness on what they call the RA scale. And if you look on Tennis Warehouse or Tennis Express or some company, some website that has all the detailed specs on racket, and you look at the specifications, and it will tell you the RA or the RA scale of a racket. And if you look at what I would consider two of the most popular rackets in the United States, I'm pretty sure the best-selling racket last year was the Babolat Aero Pro Drive, and somewhere up there was the Babolat Pure Drive. If you look at both of those on the RA scale, they're incredibly high, and that's precisely why they're so popular. They add a lot of oomph back to the ball because they're very stiff rackets, and very stiff rackets provide a lot of what we'll refer to as power. So for a student that's hitting, they feel like, oh my gosh, I'm hitting harder than ever. The shots are really crisp. I am just bombing them over the net, and my opponent is falling down every time I hit. Isn't this amazing? This is the racket for me. So the player goes home, says, Mom, this is the one Rafa uses. This feels great. I'm killing everybody. Let's play with it. Great. Let's buy our child three new rackets. The downside is, and again, one that most people don't talk about or hear, is that the stiffer the racket is, the more shock there is transmitted up the racket handle to their arm every time they hit. And if you ask me, that's one of the reasons why I think we're seeing an epidemic of especially elbow and shoulder issues, because every time you hit that ball, all that extra pace and power is going back into the ball, and that shock is traveling up the handle into your arm, And especially for a growing child, it's really a big danger.
Interesting. And so let's kind of segue into how you can kind of counter that, maybe through your choice of string and string tension, or can you counter it with your choice of string and string tension?
So one of those reasons why you might think that I am against those powerful rackets with high stiffness, and I would say that in some cases I am, for people that are either incredibly injury prone or people that have had injuries in the past, or maybe people that just don't need that amount of stiffness in their racket. But what I would say is that the key component to this whole discussion we're having is going to be the way your racket is strung. And I know a lot of people, a lot of coaches, a lot of friends of mine that will say, Matt, listen, when I go out and play, I just use whatever. Or, coaches that will say, my students are so good, you can give them anything you want and they will play fine. And my comment to you would be, a race car driver would never just grab any car and say, I'll go win this race. They can appreciate that small, minute details and differences and changes and variables can affect not just the physical side of what they're doing, but the mental and emotional side. And I think that when it comes to stringing, again, there are quite a few myths and misunderstandings that really hurt the development of the general consensus of information. So, great example, Lisa. When you hear the phrase loose for power and tight for control, I'm sure you've heard that before when it comes to stringing.
Sure.
And a huge, again, elephant in the room in the equipment and customization industry is that phrase was coined when we played with wooden rackets and natural gut string. So, and everyone had very long, fluid, straight-looking linear strokes.
Yep.
I'm sure anyone who's listening can appreciate that was a different world. That was a different sport we played.
Yes.
And so when it comes to equipment nowadays, the way we string and the tension we string at tends to be, to maybe think of it differently, would be more of a, looser produces more spin, looser produces a higher trajectory, looser is a lot easier on my body and transmits a lot less shock to my body. Tighter would cause me to lower the trajectory. Tighter would cause me to flatten out the ball. And so when we start to think like that, obviously it's like, oh, wow, that really changes the way I look at this. So I'm going to get very complex with you here, Lisa, but I think, the type of person that listens to this blog probably wants that. They don't want to have information dumbed down anymore.
We're educated around here.
Yeah, let me get right to the nitty-gritty here. So one knock that I've heard quite a bit from coaches, from sometimes the USTA, from players, is that American tennis players need to train on clay courts more. And I think that's a comment less about the fact that it has anything to do with the clay. I think it's a style of play discussion. And this is where, quote-unquote, I make my money into having this discussion with people. So a clay court style of play, higher over the net, heavier topspin, longer points, players are back off the baseline a little bit more, and it's much more slow, it's much more methodical. The grinding aspect of those points tends to build players that can stay on the court for hours and outsmart opponents with just incredible amounts of patience and strategic thinking. That's a style of play that's born out of balls that go higher over the net, have a higher trajectory, and a much steeper parabola shape to those shots. Mm-hmm. And what happens is you start to have a player that can confidently take a very dramatic loopy swing, add tons of topspin to the ball, and have it safely land way inside the baseline.
All
if you string... I'm sorry, go on.
A la Nadal, right?
Alain Nadal, or one of my favorites who I've worked with, Francesca Schiavone, is the same exact way.
Yes.
So what you start to see is, as we just mentioned, if we string a junior racket looser, then the trajectory of the ball flies higher. If the ball is flying higher over the net, it's definitely getting over the net much safer. But in order to keep said ball in play, the player has to generate more topspin. And through this concept that I talk about a lot, which I really believe in, called the natural selection of tennis strokes, if a player does something and it's successful, they will do that more. If a player does something and it goes out, what's the first thing they say to themselves? Well, that was stupid. I'm never doing that again.
Right.
So over time, their strokes start to develop. And again, if you use, and we'll talk about polyester in a minute, but if you're using very loose polyester strings that slide across each other and generate lots of topspin, you can start to create the type of player that wants to confidently take large swings at every ball to generate lots of topspin that flies high over the net and dramatically plummets into the court. And that confidence with a high margin of error over the net and from the baseline starts to build a player that loves to grind, that loves to play for hours, that is really interested in swinging as hard as they can at every shot. Does that sound familiar? That's every heavy topspin pro player there is on, you know, out there.
Sure.
And I think what's interesting about that is, again, it affects a player's mentality. So I coach several players that their big battle is, am I confident when I'm playing? Am I happy when I'm playing? Am I enjoying that sort of nervous anxiety of each point grinding and grinding and grinding? And yet they hit an inch over the net every time. And it really, I think, negatively affects their psyche when they play.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So the flip side of that would be that if we were to string a player's racket much tighter, and I get this question a lot, they say, okay, great, looser's better. What about tighter? Why wouldn't we want to go tighter? The flip side to tighter tensions is going to be kind of like we alluded to with these stiffer rackets. The stiffer the racket is, the more shock is going to be transmitted up our arm. And the same goes with the tighter string job. The tighter the string job, the harder it's going to be for that ball to push up against it. And the balls are going to have a lower trajectory, which means we're aiming closer over the net. We're walking that fine line to hitting balls in the net, and we're flattening balls out. If that's the style of play that you would like to go for, then stringing on the tighter side is definitely an option. And when I say tighter, I'm meaning somewhere between 50 and probably 50 and 60 pounds is on the tighter side nowadays. We see fewer and fewer people stringing above 60 pounds, although there are still certainly some outliers out there that really take it to the extremes, I guess you could say. I've worked with a couple pro players that want to string a lot tighter because they know when you hit more topspin, balls tend to slow down a little bit. And again, more of a clay court style, they want to play hard court style. Step in, crunch it, finish the point. My only issue there sometimes is that's not necessarily a way that most American juniors are capable of playing.
Interesting. And you said 50 to 60 pounds is considered on the tighter end. What's the looser range?
Well, I should clarify that with the fact that it all depends on what type of string you're going to play with.
Okay.
So if you're playing with a synthetic gut, a typically fairly soft string that breaks pretty easily, you can string that at 60 pounds, and even though it's going to feel tight and it's probably not going to give you a lot, your arm might not fall off. It would be less likely to than, let's say, if you strung a polyester at 60 pounds.
Okay.
That would certainly be an eye-opener for me, and it's happened before where I did a double take. Wah, wah, wah. You're stringing a polyester at 60 pounds, and you're wondering why your child's shoulder hurts at 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Horror stories like that have happened where, again, I think people pick up information from the Internet, which can be a valuable resource but also very misleading, or they follow what their pro does. So that's my favorite line I hear is I'll talk to someone and consult with them as I do and say, you know, what's going on? And they'll say, oh, well, her coach said that that's what he does. So we decided to do the same because she felt like she liked it. And again, the comment would be, that might be great for her play, but her body has got to come first.
That's a big point right there, what you just said. Can you, I'll restate it. You said it may be great for her play, but her body has to come first. And I think that is an enormous message for parents and coaches to hear. It's that whole process versus results. And we need to focus on the process to keep these kids healthy and playing long term.
Well, and again, if you know, I'm an East Coaster originally, so I have this wonderful ability to say what some people maybe are a little hesitant to say or might be a little out there sometimes. But what I'll say is this, that let's be honest, when it comes to equipment, most players will just figure they'll get this. The junior, let me say it this way. Most of your junior tennis, other than trying to impress a college coach, quote unquote, doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. And I think we lose sight of that sometimes. I know I have that with students of mine. Their parents are going nuts that they lost in the finals of this tournament in the 14 and unders. And you say, the 12s are to build for the 14s. The 14s are to build for the 16s. The 16s for the 18s. And the 18s probably to not get a nice tennis scholarship if all things goes well. If not, it's to play for the rest of your life. So when it comes to what they're doing, if this has a 50% reduction on their ability to play, but a 100% guarantee that they're going to feel great for the rest of their lives, to me, that's a no-brainer.
Right.
I don't want to have one student that is having micro tear surgery in their shoulder, or I have a client I work with right now who literally, this is going to blow your mind, Lisa, cannot feel the backside of her right hand. She has no feeling in her right hand. She's had multiple surgeries on her ulnar nerve in her elbow, and she has no feeling on the backside of her hand.
How old is she?
Now she's 21. She played in college, thought about going pro, still is tormented with the idea because she's had some great wins when playing some challengers. But for me to think about her living the rest of her life, A, not being able to play because she's in agony, but B, with the fact that every day when she goes to the bank, when she goes to the supermarket, when she goes to work, she can't feel the back of her right hand because of all these surgeries. And not to say that I would have been able to stop that, or maybe that's a force that maybe I couldn't have foreseen or it was natural, but to think that maybe they were just kind of doing whatever, this looks good, this works well, my coach gave me this for free, it's upsetting. It's sad to think about. It really is.
Yeah. All right, so talk to us about choosing string, because to me, I swear, it's one of the most confusing things, and thankfully my kid's 17 and a half and I don't have to be part of that conversation anymore. But honestly, I mean, if you could see the variety of string packets that we have in our house, things that he's won at camp or that, you know, he got as a prize for this, that, or the other thing, they're just sitting in my house because we know thing about them, and like I guess most tennis players, he's a creature of habit, and you know, his string's his string, and don't talk to me about changing string. I'm playing with what I play with. What's good, what's bad, what makes it good, what makes it bad, how do we decide what's best for our child?
So let's throw something out there to begin with. Nowadays, there's really two classifications of string, and I'm, again, trying to not dumb it down, but really simplify the confusion for everyone, because there's so many options and different claims, and this is like natural gut, and this is the new technology and all that stuff. There's really two classifications of string when it comes to what's important to junior tennis players nowadays, polyester and non-polyester. That's the two camps. You have polyester strings that more or less are plastic strings. They all have different ingredients and recipes, all the different brands and types of string. But the important part is they're a hard, durable, slick-surfaced string. And then you have everything else, which would include synthetic gut, which is basically a very inexpensive nylon string, multi-filament strings, which are super soft, that are almost like braided pieces of rope that are very arm-friendly but maybe don't produce a lot of spin. And then that would also include natural gut, which is its own category, really, but is most of the time out of 90% of people's budgetary vision. It's very expensive. And also, for most people, they just don't need it. They don't hit hard enough to reap the benefits of it, or they don't string tight enough to really warrant using it. So I want to talk about those two camps.
Okay.
Most of what's going on nowadays with juniors is about building a game around hitting lots of spin, heavy kick serves, underspin on volleys, ripping heavy topspin ground strokes. And so what comes out of that is what is going to enhance that. And like I alluded to earlier, stringing looser helps you to produce more topspin. As we said earlier in the show, rackets with more open string patterns help to produce more topspin. But the big one and the biggest innovation in tennis technology in the last 30 years is polyester strings. And the reason is this, Lisa. When the polyester strings, these plastic, durable, slick surface strings, slide across each other when you hit the ball. And when they slide, they help to fling the ball back in the direction from whence it came and enhance the amount of topspin you're hitting. So that's, you're saying, great, that's awesome, that's wonderful, that's what I like. There is a downside. And the downside is able to be maneuvered around, but you need to know how to do it. So the downside to polyester strings is that they are very stiff. So if you strung a racket with, let's say, nylon tennis string, $2.50 synthetic gut, if you strung that at 50 pounds, and then you had a second racket with polyester strung at 50 pounds, that racket with polyester in it would feel twice as stiff as the synthetic gut. It would feel incredibly stiff. It would probably bother your arm. I've seen some of the best players in the world go from a hybrid to a full string bed of polyester at the same tension they normally do, and it bothers them right out the gates.
Mm.
So the strategy, if everybody takes one thing from today, this might be one of those little nuggets. There's a strategy to counteract the stiffness of polyester string and to reap the benefits, and it's two parts. The first part is we want to use the thinnest gauge possible. So that means the thinnest thickness of that string that's available. The second one is going to be we're going to drop the tension dramatically. So like I alluded to, if you strung two packets the same tension at 50, one with synthetic gut, one with polyester, the polyester feels thicker, or excuse me, stiffer. If we strung that same set of polyester maybe at 40 pounds, it would feel to the player the same way as the synthetic gut strung at 50. And I think this is where people should start to appreciate that the recommended tension on their racket is not really a good predictor of where you should string. So I'm sure everybody's heard, it says recommended is 50 to 60, but that doesn't take into account whether it's you're stringing for your grandmother or your child or Rafael Nadal.
Right.
So to give you a great example, at Indian Wells this year when I was stringing there, I would say the tensions are drifting lower and lower and lower. So there's very many high-profile players that are stringing in the 40s. There are many that are stringing still way above 60 pounds, but the numbers are drifting more and more towards the 40s. If I had to arbitrarily off the top of my head try to pick an average tension somewhere at Indian Wells, it would probably be in the high 40s or low 50s. And I think a lot of people would be shocked to hear that because you think, well, you know, my Pure Drive says, you know, 50 to 60 pounds, so or 55 to 65. So I always get it strung at 58. And again, my comment would be that the tension is only a number. the feel, the dynamic stiffness of that string bed is what we really care about. And sometimes we need to alter that number in ways that maybe we didn't foresee to get a desired result.
Well, so let me ask this question then. If a player is considering changing their tension, how long on average, I know you can't be exact, but how long on average does it take to get used to a new string tension or even a new type of string?
Well, that's certainly an interesting question, and I think from using a responsible mindset as far as I don't just want to say, hey, you should switch and who cares what happens, I think having negative results on court would actually hinder that process. Because if a player is going, yeah, I'm trying to change and it's not doing what I want and I'm playing like crap, maybe I shouldn't make this change, then that just totally circumvented the whole process there. So I would say on average, I usually give people 2 weeks. You got 2 weeks to go out and play a bunch, hit a bunch. If you've got 2 weeks in between a big tournament, go for it. But my suggestion would be, don't switch back and forth. So I hear that a lot. Well, what if I just play my matches with my old racket and I'll practice with the new one? That's going to send your muscle memory into overdrive, and your body is going to have no idea which is the best way to play or which is the best way to hit. There's going to have to come a point where maybe you try a racket a certain way, say, you know what, this might be for me, it's better for my body, and then say, okay, let me cut out all my old ones, fill it up, all of my rackets the new way, and just make a go at it and give myself, again, maybe a week and a half to 2 weeks, maybe like 6 to 8 hit sessions, couple matches. You're not really going to see the benefits of it maybe for a while because you might not trust it, but if you have a chance to hit with it for 2 weeks, you'll know a little bit more of what can I do with this racket and what can I not do. And I think that's the important part, is you've got to really get a feel of, if I do X, my racket will do Y. That's where most pros don't switch rackets throughout their entire career. Like I said earlier, even though they might have a new paint job, you have a lot of pros that are actually still using the same exact rackets from when they were juniors, because they know, even as you said about your son, Lisa, that he likes what he likes. And
right.
If he's going to get better as a player, he needs to trust what his equipment is going to do.
Right, right. Well, okay, so, I mean, all of this is just, it's fascinating to me, and it's information that I've never really thought about too much. But realistically, if a player were to, let me back up. If a player is not having any pain or discomfort when they play tennis, everything feels good when they're out there, is there a reason to take a closer look at their racket, their string, and their string tension, or can we assume that they're using what's right for them?
So that's a wonderful question, and I think what's so cool about that is I do discuss with lots of people the injury issue, and what I really love about this, and I'm fascinated personally by this dynamic and equipment and customization, is that if you work with a high enough level player, they're not just going to shoot for the minimum success story, meaning, yay, I'm playing, I'm not injured. That's not enough for them. They want to find a weapon that enhances and brings out certain aspects of their game to its fullest. And I think that's a comment on the pro game, how competitive it is, mm-hmm. that they'll be like, great, I'm not injured, I get it, but I want to do more of this, or I need more of this, because every game I win because of that is going to make me more money, is going to make me more successful, is going to bring my ranking up. So I think when that applies to juniors, I think one topic we don't discuss enough is cost. So there are many different string companies out there that make different strings that are probably very similar. So let's just take polyester strings, for example. There is not a string company out there, I don't think, that doesn't make a version of a polyester string. Mm-hmm. Now, between paying, you know, $18 for a set of RPM Blast retail, or paying $3 for a set of golden set, polyester. I'm not necessarily going to say one plays better than the other. They play differently. But I don't think it's required for your child to buy an $18 set of RPM Blast once a week. So I think when it comes to parenting, it's important to appreciate that there is a cost element. And as your child gets older and better and hits with more topspin, they're going to start tearing through strings, and you're going to have to keep paying for that investment. That's not a one-time, well, we bought them rackets last February, so those are good. These
right.
strings are going to have to be replaced quite often. And so I think there's a certain level of quality versus cost that we want to try to meet in the middle. And I will say, as far as when it comes to polyester strings, just to sort of go off on this tangent here, the biggest issue I would look for is there's really two. Spin potential. So there are some polyesters that don't slide across themselves as much and don't add as much spin. I would say that's probably a little less desirable. The other big one I would say is tension maintenance, Lisa. So can I string a racket at 45 pounds and hit with it a week later and it's still close to 45 pounds? It won't be exactly 45 because once you pull a string to tension, it's going to creep out and lose more tension from every second that it's strung. But is there a string that maybe holds tension a little bit better? I will say for myself that that's really what we pride ourselves on at Solinco, for my shameless plug moment, that our Tour Bite string is the best string at tension maintenance and was voted, I believe, 3 years in a row now as the polyester of the year has been voted to be the most spin potential producing string of all time by the United States Racket Stringers Association. And I think when you start to look at variables like those, all of a sudden you say, well, so what am I really getting out of a $16 set of Luxilon 4G that maybe I won't get out of a $12 set of Solinco Tour Bite or something similar to that?
Right, right. And I want to just throw this in there. For those of you who have kids that are going through string like crazy, and I'm one of those parents, I will say invest in a reel of string once they've made a decision as to what string they like, because it's so much more cost effective. So I'm just going to throw it out. Don't buy individual packets. Buy the dang reel. It costs you a lot up front, but per stringing, it breaks down to be way less expensive.
And if I could throw something out there, and this is just one of those points that's kind of random, but I really want to make it clear to everybody because it's very important, Lisa. When we're talking about string gauge, so the thickness, a lot of people will say, I want my child to have the thickest gauge string possible so that it doesn't break. As you alluded to, we want strings to last. This is expensive. It's a never-ending expense, and I'd rather not spend all the money on just the darn strings. The cautionary tale I would give you, especially when it comes to polyester, is that not only do we want to string it looser, but we want to use thinner and thinner gauges. In fact, I know many professional tennis players that use 17-gauge string, 16 being the thickest, 17 being thinner, 18 even thinner than that. I know many pro players that use 17-gauge because the 16 is way too thick for them. And I just want to remind people, again, that that's a huge part of arm health and body health, is using a thin enough string. At Solinco, we actually make a 19-gauge version of Solinco Tour Bite because we want a lot of adults and older people and young juniors to be able to get the benefits of playing with polyester while having it still on the thinner side so that it plays a little softer. But, Lisa, boy, that's the number one thing. When I work with a first client and I look at the racket and I say, what gauge string is this? And they go, oh, it's 16-gauge. I say, well, why are we using that? Well, it doesn't break as often. And that's a really tough conversation for me to have, because essentially what I'm going to be telling them is, would you rather pay more money on your stringing or on your physical therapy after your surgery?
Exactly. And I will tell you from experience that the string, I don't care how much you're paying. It's way less than those physical therapy sessions.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point. Okay, so let's say somebody listening to the show, maybe me, decides they want to work with you. What is the next step?
So I do consultations for people, and it varies a lot based on location, based on the type of work they're looking to do, based on, to be honest with you, even just the player's level. There's a lot of parents I know that have me come out with them. I'm based out of San Diego, so there's a lot of Southern California parents that have me come out and work with them in the sense that my child is new, falling in love with tennis, come out and hit balls with him for a half hour and tell us where we begin our journey. And so there have been times where I've gone out and we've worked with 10 and 11-year-olds that get a 26-inch racket, and we customize that in a way that benefits a new player to the game. Like I alluded to, one of my favorite interactions was working with Francesca Schiavone and the Italian Fed Cup team, and getting to be with her at Indian Wells, and to be honest, being honored by having her ask me out to the court to tell her what I thought about the new string that Babolat wanted her to try out. So typically what will happen is someone will email me, a parent, even sometimes the player, and say, can we get together, hit some balls, have you watch me hit some balls? And a key component here is discuss what I want to achieve out of my equipment. So like I said earlier, do I want to flatten out the ball and end points fast? Do I want to build a sense of confidence and aggression and extend points longer and longer and longer? Am I injured? Do I want to prevent injuries? Typically, this process would go like this. We would talk a bit. I would hit with the player. I would probably watch them hit with someone else, maybe even watch them play a match to try to get a real honest sense of their style of play and what they're hoping to achieve. If I could talk with their coach, that would be beneficial, because let's be real, a lot of coaches have a different viewpoint of what they want there for their player. They have a different view of where their player is going and what they want to practice with them. And then we would start to do the experimenting. And I think that's a concept that any customizer or stringer can appreciate. But again, a lot of people that are budget conscious might say, oh boy, really? We're going to start experimenting and trying stuff? But, you know, Lisa, I would ask you, if your son hadn't tried his current setup that you said he loves so much, if he might be as happy or less happy with what equipment he has.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say when it comes to experimenting, you know, that would mean a couple things. One, trying out different rackets, so different frames, like we said, those variables that don't change. Two would be, once we pick a racket, trying out some different tensions, so stringing rackets tighter, looser, a whole gradient of them, having them hit with all of them at once, so maybe taking five different tensions out to the court, hitting with each one for 20 minutes and describing which one they like better, what it did differently, how it felt to them. And then probably the next variable for me would be discussing the weighting. So the weight and the balance, how much weight is in the head, how much is in the handle, do I like a heavier racket, a lighter racket, some of those variables.
Okay. And so for somebody that wants to reach out to you, your email address is?
So anybody that wants to get in touch with me, I'd be more than happy to answer questions, discuss things, send them links to YouTube videos that explain things, whatever I can do to help, I'm very happy to do that, and that's my passion. My email address is Matt, with two T's, P, Matt P, at solincosports.com. Solinco spelled S-O-L-I-N-C-O sports.com. Matt P at solincosports.com.
Fantastic. We're just coming to the end of the show, so I just wanted to let the listeners know that I will include Matt's email on the podcast link on the radio show tab at parentingaces.com. So in case you missed that, I will have it on that page in case you want to reach out to him. And Matt, I just want to thank you so much. I've learned an incredible amount today, and my head's kind of spinning actually right now with all different things to think about. Really for my own game more than for my point. But thank you so much for being with us. And to my listeners, thanks for tuning in. Have a great week, everybody. See you on the courts.